A message from the comical heathen. It's not always easy to recognize if someone you love has become a member of a cult. Here are some of the warning signs. If their official uniforms look suspiciously like hospital gowns. If eternal life is the prison sentence their leader is facing. If the guy next to you says, "You can call me Herb, but my full name is Herbal Essence." If their facility features a parabolic neutrino reflector and also a hot tub. If their group's orientation video is Animal House. If they rate the quality of cookware on a scale from 1 to 5 erect penises. If someone you love is demonstrating cult-like behaviors, direct them to the comical heathen. We could really use the followers.
All right, everybody, welcome to this live stream broadcast of the Comical Heathen Podcast. Very excited to be here this evening, this Tuesday in November, 1 week after the general election. I am here with my good friend and tonight's co-host, John Hensler. John, how are you doing?
I'm amazing. I'm excited to talk about the elections, what happened, and catch up with you a little bit.
So this live stream is being called a Q&A. John and I have spent the past couple of days searching the social media stratosphere, looking for questions and topics, asking our followers if they had anything they wanted us to talk about. John is in charge, more or less, of the agenda of questions and topics. This is inspired by the Comical Heathen Live Show has a Q&A portion where I ask the audience for questions about religion, satire, comedy, or whatever. And I just discovered that audiences like that, like better than any of my dumbass jokes. So it just became a premise for the live streams that I do. And John has actually hosted the Comical Heathen Live Show on occasion. So thank you for doing that, John. I was thinking about you, John, and the live show, because I've done the live show a few times, but it got really slowed down during the pandemic. And I don't think I've done it in Cleveland in a while, like actual my almost hometown of Cleveland.
Yeah.
So maybe we should make that happen.
78th Street Studios, I think, was the last time I remember doing it with you. And that was, like you said, pre-COVID. So,
yep, that's the only place in Cleveland properly. I've done it a couple times out here near Painesville, and I've done it on the road, but I haven't done it in Cleveland in a couple of years, actually. So maybe that's on the horizon, my New Year's resolution. So anyway, today's show, besides me and John dicking around, we're going to have some other guests. At the half hour mark, we're bringing on headliner and local comedy legend, Madman Marv Connor. And if you follow Marv on social media, he's always posting about politics and getting into it with people. And as a comedian, he does satire and political stuff too. So I thought he'd be a fun guy to have on. And in a little bit, John, I'm also going to have on a very good friend of mine, political consultant and president of the Young Lake County Young Democrats, Dan Crowder. But before we get to any guests, John, how about to have some you and me time? So how are you doing, John?
Cool. I'm doing amazing, actually. I just, my fiance and I just got two new cats. We weren't really planning on getting one, but you know, that goes. So it's fun. That's always a good time introducing them to the other cats and getting to know them. So that's kind of where most of my time is being spent now.
And for those of you who are paying close attention, John did just slip into referring to his partner as his fiance. So yes, they are somewhat recently engaged, if you didn't know. Congratulations, John.
Yeah,
or condolences, whichever is more appropriate in your case.
Yeah, it depends on the day, I guess.
John, what is, if the theme of today's Q&A is the election 1 week on, what's one thing, get us rolling, what's one thing that's on your mind from the election that you want to make sure you get to say?
I think really the most interesting thing is really the mandate, I think, that the people set both through the ballot box and through exit polling, because I think clearly if you watched it and saw the results of a lot of the Trump candidates, they didn't fare very well, especially if you look at establishment Republicans like John Sununu in New Hampshire and Kemp in Georgia winning their gubernatorial races pretty handily. And then on the down ballots, either they're going to a runoff or they lost to a Democrat. So I think definitely that's one message being sent, that Trump candidates maybe aren't as strong as people thought. But exit polls show that Joe Biden's not very popular either. and that a lot of people, a majority of the country, doesn't want to see him as a president in the next 4 years. And that includes a lot of Democrats. So I think some strong messages have definitely been sent in his midterms. And I think the turnout really was the biggest one.
I think one thing I'll say about the Biden approval ratings, and I've heard a couple other people say what I'm going to say, and it just makes sense to me, but I'm an academic. I can't take credit for other people's thoughts. It's just that, yes, it's the low 40s. And yes, he, I'm sure, and other Democrats would like it to be higher. But don't you get the feeling that people who hate Trump hate Trump. And for whatever reason, people who hated Obama hate Obama. But people are just like, meh, Biden. It's like, except for like the hardcore righties, but I mean like the centrist and people in America, doesn't it seem like a low affection dislike, not a that virulent, passionate dislike that Obama and Trump generated?
Does I feel like it's sense? Almost... Oh, I think you're definitely right, but I think that's almost worse because, yeah, you have a group of people who hate Trump, but you also have a lot of people who love Trump. You got a lot of people who hated Obama. Mm-hmm. You have a lot of people who loved Obama. I think on both sides, most people with Biden are just kind of meh. And I don't think that bodes very well for him in 2 years when people are going. And I mean, Republicans didn't do very well this time, but don't count them out in two more years either. And I think the Democrats do a lot better if they have a younger, more charismatic candidate against Trump or DeSantis, whoever it may be, than if they just run Biden again, who is kind of just meh.
I mean, it's all hypothetical, but there was a feeling that Biden was the only one who could have beaten Trump. But that was 2 years ago.
Well, that's what he says. Well, he's the only one who did.
Well, of course, that's what he says. But the idea, because he's like an old grandfatherly figure, he's less threatening to, you know, white moderates in certain suburbs.
I guess, and I think that
young
probably
that you and I might be excited about might scare white people in suburban settings.
Sure. And I get that. And I think in this last election, certainly, I think that was the case. Maybe he's who we needed. But I think
yes, we can definitely emphasize the maybe.
I saw an interesting and I'll admit I didn't read it. I saw an interesting headline, though, that I mean, it's salacious.
I don't
know
what's
going to happen, but it's interesting to talk about. It said that Biden should replace Harris with Gavin Newsom and then resign prior to 2024, which, I mean, I don't know if Gavin Newsom exactly, because just being from California, I think sets a target on him for Republicans. But I think someone like Gavin Newsom, who's not a Bernie Sanders or even Elizabeth Warren, someone who is a little more of an established Democrat, but who's also a little bit younger, charismatic, and part of the new wave more than the old one.
All right, John, let's try to do a semblance of a Q&A. So you were in charge of gathering together whatever you could find on Facebook posts or online or whatever, your mailman, your dog walker, your cat walker, your fiance. Yeah, what's a good question you want to start with?
I think one right at the top that might be good. Some people were commenting on Facebook about the Arizona elections and, you know, why it's taking so long for them to count the votes. And they were kind of noting how that kind of leads to this whole people not trusting the vote count. And so I think that's a good one, because I think a lot of the distrust from the vote counts comes from people taking things that are very normal about the vote counts and making them seem like they're abnormal. Like, they're trying to paint as well, they should be done by midnight on election night, which is never the case. There's always these counting that's going on. But so maybe you can kind of give some clarity as to why exactly in Arizona and these other places it's taking so long to count.
Well, I'm sitting here in Painesville, Ohio, the town that sounds like what it means. So I'm not on the ground in any of these places. And we do have a bona fide political consultant coming on in a few minutes. But anytime an election is close, John, do a song and dance number while I'm coughing.
Hello, my baby. Hello, my darling.
No, stop. I can't afford the royalties on that. just anytime an election is close, first of all, both candidates have a right to request a recount. And also, anytime an election is close, the absentee ballots and overseas ballots become decisive or could be decisive. So they have to count every vote. So if you believe in a democracy where they count every vote, then you have also wrap your arms around the idea that sometimes it takes more than 5 minutes to count every vote. Now, different states, because state boards of elections set the rules, have different rules about runoffs and close elections and when to do recounts. And I think that also adds just to the chaos, because a person could sit in Ohio where we do, I believe, plurality voting, which is just whoever gets the most wins, end of story. and he'd be looking at Georgia or somewhere where they do a runoff and be like, this dissonance, because it's two different processes are happening.
Right.
And then there's Alaska, 50 different
Alaska does happening. Alaska does ranked choice voting, which is a whole different, and that takes. And I mean, if you look at Maricopa County, and this was kind of my answer to the person who asked it, was, I mean, that's one of the largest voting districts in the United States. And their point was, well, so was LA County and New York and place Harrison County in Texas. And my point was, you know, yeah, they got their votes counted, but those races weren't as close. And I actually went and looked at the Los Angeles County race, and the sheriff's race and the mayoral race are still up for grabs because they are so close and they are still counting. So it's not that Los Angeles and New York, these other counties, have finished their countings. It's just their races weren't so close that they weren't able to call them election night or a day or so after. So that makes a huge difference, too, I think.
If you're in LA or maybe certain places, left or right, if a candidate is in a county that has such a large ratio of their party, then it won't take long to get to being so far ahead.
Yeah, right.
Exactly. Whereas in some places where they're actual purple states or purple counties are just a highly contested race.
Yeah, it's easier to call it when it's 54% to 46 than it is, you know, 49 to 49.5.
Well, in normal world, a person will eventually concede as well, if the night of or eventually.
Yeah.
Obviously, we're still waiting for the last loser to concede. And I was having brunch with a friend of mine 2 years ago, and he leans right, and he voted for Mr. T. I'm sorry, not the Mr. T, but T. Rump. He said he expected him to lose 2 years ago, and he was going on about like how Trump would make the greatest concession speech of all time, because it would like be all about him, and it would be all blustery.
Of course he would.
And I thought, yeah, that would be fantastic. And then, you know, at breakfast on election day 2 years ago, I said, but he's never going to concede. He can't admit to losing. So I wish Gaz had been right on that prediction, because I would have preferred to see his outrageous concession speech to what is currently happening on that front.
And it might have been a little more peaceful of a transition, too. Who knows?
Yeah, we could have done with one fewer insurrection, but I'm old. I've been pampered by 10 or 12 straight presidential elections without insurrections. So, you know, I just wasn't prepared. John, let's do one more question with the two of us, and then we'll bring Dan on.
Good ones. A lot of these would be good to get his opinions on.
You're the one who's collating this material. So John is calling an audible, and we're going to go to introducing my friend here. He is a political consultant and president of the Lake County Young Dems. Please welcome to the Comical Heathen live stream my good friend, Dan Crowder.
Hello, Jerry. Thank you for having me.
Hello. Dan. Thank you for joining us. I know I invited Dan on and I gave him two mission statements. The first one was to get anything off his chest that he wants to get off his chest. And the second one was to fact check and correct doofuses who might know about comedy, but undoubtedly could make all kinds of mistakes talking about elections.
Yeah, the only problem is if we wanted me to actually get everything off my chest, I'd like to. We'll be here for a couple hours, and I'll probably lose some clients. No, I think you guys have touched on a lot of great things, and I know, Jerry, you wanted me to kind of touch on some things that I want to talk about in this election. And really, what we saw was a change in how voter contact, at least here in Ohio, was handled. And it was handled much differently than the rest of the country. We saw a huge step backwards in Ohio when it came to voter contact. So going door to door to see voters at their house, going to events, going out and having that personal conversation where, like you talked about with your friend, having a meal, you're able to talk and kind of better understand people. You're able to really take what the other person feels into account, better than typing away and having a Facebook argument or sending a postcard to someone who you don't know and say, hey, please vote for this person. You don't know me. I don't know you. I'm not giving you any good reasons, but go and do this for me. We saw a huge step back there. You know, you gave me like 20 minutes, so I have just notes. Scrambled me like that.
Yes. Well, we want to get your response to some of the
questions John has. I'll get more stuff off my chest later.
Okay. Well, make sure you do. John, what's your next question?
Okay. I think an interesting one. I think definitely now that the main election is over, so to speak, I think we're all kind of turning our eyes and focus to the runoffs in Georgia coming up. And I'm wondering if we can look back 2 years and look at the runoff elections with Ossoff and Warnock 2 years ago. And if we can kind of predict what we might should be able to see, or if this is just a completely different scenario and there's really no way to tell.
Sure. From my perspective, it's very similar, but it's not quite the same. And I say that with Herschel Walker and Kelly Loeffler, Loeffler being the Republican candidate against Warnock back in 2020 in the runoff. They're both very conservative Trump endorsed candidates whose qualifications can be brought into question a little bit as to why they should be in the U.S. Senate. Kelly Loeffler, billionaire. I know her as a sports owner, sports team owner. She owns, I think, a portion of the WNBA team in Atlanta. Herschel Walker, NFL running back. That's their qualifications. And what we're seeing is a very close race due to the, you know, 50+1 law in elections in certain states, this runoff law. If you don't get 50% plus one vote or better, you have to go into this other run where there's only two candidates, which will kind of force that to happen. It's similar. It's going to be close. If anyone says, hey, well, we won Nevada, we won, we have the 50 votes we need, we have the White House, so you automatically have a tiebreaker in the Senate, we're good. The vote difference, I think, as we started here today, was 30,000. Turnout's not going to be the same. Every organizer from, you know, Washington to Maine to New Mexico to Florida are all going to conglomerate into Georgia. It is the all-stars. That's what these runoffs are. It's the all-stars of organizing all in one room. It's going to be close, but you can use lots of predictions. If you made me make a pick today, I'd take Warnock. I'd ask to get a half a point. Using the gambling in me, I'd ask to get a half a point here.
It's having a Senate where the Democrats have 51, I think is immensely different than the 50-50 split, given the numbers we have. I mean, it might only seem like one, or in a way it goes from even to a spread of two, right? 49-51.
Especially when you consider Manchin and Sinema.
Yes, exactly. And then on top of that, this is going to be with a Republican-led House, and who knows what legislation comes out of that. So I would rather have batshit crazy legislation from the House have a 51-49 buffer zone than a 50-50 buffer zone.
Well, and it was just confirmed not too long ago. Kevin McCarthy has held off his challenger. I think it was Andy Bevin. So he will be the next Speaker of the House. Not saying that everything he has promoted within his party is batshit crazy, but a lot of the things that he's allowed to happen certainly look that way.
Well, I learned something the past 48 hours, and if I got this wrong or got the back end of the ass somehow, but I was trying to see how the so-called Freedom Caucus fared in this election cycle because they lost some seats and they won some seats. So I didn't know like what the net gains or losses were for them. And we can talk about that. But the thing that I learned is that the Freedom Caucus itself is like a secret society.
A little bit.
That they don't publicize or publish their members' names. Only those who like self-identify as members of the Freedom Caucus. And sometimes people out each other. Like I was just at a meeting with my fellow Freedom Caucus, you know, brother, blah, blah, blah. But I find that also, let's just say, a lack of transparency about who's even in the Freedom Caucus to be as disturbing as anything else about the Freedom Caucus.
And what are you ashamed of? If this is what your ideology is and what your politics is, what are you hiding from? Your voters, I guess.
Yes. Hey, speaking of hiding from voters, Dan, how about you and I are here in Lake County, Ohio. When I moved here in 2008, I was told that Lake County was a bellwether county that could be used to predict elections. I don't think it's that anymore.
So for context there, and I don't believe I have this stat wrong, Lake County, it matched up with the national results. The winner of Lake County also won the country, I want to say, since JFK up until 2012 when Mitt Romney won by a very thin margin. Ultimately, I think he still lost the state. And everything of that 62-year cycle goes away. And from there, you know, Trump wins handedly in 2016. So he does get that marker back, only to lose it in 2020, where he wins Lake County, but loses the presidency, as we well know. That bellwether change is really a demographic change. It's
Okay.
Lake County, historically, specifically in the West End, was a lot of union families and, you know, blue collar workers that supported the Democratic Party because the Democratic Party gave them the best path forward and the best opportunity to provide for their families and be safe and secure. Mm-hmm. And now a lot of those households have stayed, but aged, and their needs have changed and their wants have changed. And it doesn't match up necessarily with what the national message is. But the beauty of partisan politics, the only beauty of partisan politics, is a party locally is meant to address those needs. It mm-hmm. kind of fall under, here is the requirements of the Democratic Party nationally. Great. Awesome. There they are. And then if you drill down a little bit, here's the state, which is a little more focused. What's meant to be is right below that is 88 counties that all treat, 88 here in Ohio, other states are different, but that all focus on the issues that directly affect the people in their backyards. That's hopefully where we're going to go back to. It's a little difficult in today's world where, hey, someone has a disagreement with you. We have Jerry, you and I have a good friend that ran for state representative this year in Evan Rossborough, who, you know, told me on election night that someone found out he was a Democrat and walked up to him. And I'm not going to say, you told me I could swear, but I'm not going to say what was said to him only because of how bad it was.
Okay.
And what was the guy's rationale was, you're a Democrat, so therefore I can say these things to you. I can threaten you. I can get in your face. I can say all these negative things about you. If the guy took 15 seconds to listen to Evan, he'd realize that everything he's proposed, everything he's talked about, would benefit this guy's life. I don't know him personally. I just know what was being talked. We need to get that conversation being able to be had without the yelling and screaming and fighting.
So I went and worked a poll for a couple hours for Evan. And I was standing there holding his sign. And it was during one of the off hours, like 10 a.m. Mm-hmm. So not much was happening. And there was one dude for the Republican Party there as well. We had to stand 100 feet away. And I had my sign and he had whatever the hell he was doing. And I do want to say he and I had a perfectly congenial, gentlemanly conversation without raising voices, swearing, or accusing each other of eating babies, or the word libtard was not used even one time during the whole conversation. So it is at least possible. Now, I wasn't a candidate. Also, I wasn't with the right asshole. But I want to say the gentleman I was talking to, I would have needed, like, I don't know, AP fact checkers to have a conversation with this person. It was a torrent of misinformation. To be fair, I won't say that everything he said was incorrect, but the vast majority of everything he said was incorrect. And since he said so many incorrect things, I just want to tell you one of my pet favorite ones. And to make it clear to the 12 regular listeners of this podcast, I am not making this up just so I can then say a dumb joke, although there may be a dumb joke at the end of this. I swear to Dionysus, the god of theater, which is the only god I believe in, that this was a real conversation. And the person, we're talking about homelessness in Painesville, and then he brought up, according to him, as the Bible says, if you give a man a fish, he eats for a day. And those of you who know your Bible know, John, the Bible says no such thing. Again, if I had corrected everything he said, all I would have been doing was correcting. I probably would have been called nasty names. So I just turned it into like, yeah, but you're still supposed to feed the guy, right? Like, you're not supposed to not give him a fish and let him die of starvation. You're actually supposed to feed him. And then
that's more the biblical message if you read the Bible.
Yeah.
Feed the poor, not chastise them.
And so I was went home and fact checked myself because I was like, I don't think that's in the Bible. And so I don't know if John or Dan, have you come across, I did a little bit of research where this expression, the actual like quote comes from.
Where it comes from? Oh, I have no clue. I know it's not from the Bible, but
no, I just put a scroll on the bottom of the live stream that is for quoteinvestigator.com. And in 2016, they wrote an article about this. And in the 1800s, there was a writer called Anne Isabel Thackeray Ritchie.
Oh, her?
Who wrote a novel. And in that novel, there's a character who said this. And that is the first known use of this quote. A novel from the 1800s.
A little after the Bible.
A little after the Bible. And the phrase caught on just for historical reasons after with how the book was published, because they used to publish novels in like chapters and magazines. And so it just made it kind of like a pop culture thing when it came out, 15 minutes of fame. But the quote stuck.
And I think it's, arguing with a lot of Republicans online in real life, I think they like to use a lot of truisms like that. Like that's not wrong. Like it is better to teach them how to do something so they can survive on their own versus, you know, just giving them something. Like it's not bad advice, but to use it as like the way that they do as a way to shut down, hey, like we need certain social programs so that people have time to go fishing.
Right.
So that, you know, so that people actually have the capability to go learn how
to literally fish. Means the opposite of what they're saying that it means. Because what it's about is preventative charity. It's about getting ahead of a crisis by setting up things such like as fishing lessons and you know, job hunting skills and places where people can eat before they're homeless or dying of starvation.
And maybe a babysitter so you can learn and go learn.
But it reminds me of another biblical expression, John. Perhaps you've heard it. If you give a man a vote, he'll vote for one day. But if you take away his vote, the odds are you're a Republican. That's in the Bible, by the way, in case you didn't know that. So
Jerry 3:15.
Yeah, absolutely. Go ahead, John.
Well, I was going to see if I can throw out another question real quick or if you were wrapping up or.
Well, we have one more guest to bring on. So let's bring in this one more guest and then have your question ready to go.
That works.
All right. We're going to have our special guest coming in at the half hour mark, Akron-based, two-time history teacher, one-time professional comedian. Welcome to the stream, Mad Marv Connor.
Thank you. With my hippie background, I got it all going on here.
Hell yes.
How liberal are you? Well, not enough.
Yes, no. Think of Bernie Sanders, and I'm a little left of that. That will give you some bearings. I mean, look at my haircut. I told my barber, give me the sexy lesbian.
You're doing quotes. I was watching Morning Joe, and it said they asked Pat Buchanan about why when Kennedy stole Illinois, why didn't the Republicans complain? He goes, because we stole Kentucky. See, we need that kind of moderation back in politics. We need
Dan, you're Dan. Sorry, Dan. This is Marv. Marv, this is Dan. Marv,
hi, Dan.
You're a two-time history professor. What do you think is the historical significance of the 2022 elections, Marv?
Oh, me. Okay, I thought you were.
Sorry, I did say Dan's name in there.
I think you did. I am not a history professor. I want to make that clear. I never.
Well, the big thing is, you know, everyone expected Republicans to do so well, and we're all shocked that they didn't. I think what it means is this new generation of, from what I'm seeing, I don't have the data that says more young people voted, but it looks like Gen Z came out, got off their ass and came out and made a difference in the election because they wanted to keep democracy, because we were all telling them democracy is at stake. And from what we can tell, it was, because they were saying, we're not going to let Democrats win any more elections if you win in this state or that state. So they came out and they made a big difference. And I think what that means is our politics is going to be more vibrant, more alive, and people will probably get closer to what they actually want politicians to do if they get involved. That's what I'm hoping to see.
And some of these close elections in purple states or even things that might have gone Republican in another year, I think choice was on people's minds. Exit polling showed that was one of the top two or three top issues on voters' minds. Dan, do you have any statistics about either of these demographics or other voter trends we should be aware of?
So we won't know for certain in terms of that sort of age breakdown until we get into the election certification in probably another 10 days or so. But what we've seen, at least from exit polls, is, Gen Z has come out and vote, much like what Marv said, not only just in the broad sense of protecting democracy, but, hey, let's look at the last 2 years and seeing what Republicans have sort of obfuscated and delayed. They stopped bills and legislation that would protect our environment and help move us in a direction towards more renewable energy sources. They protested vehemently against relief, both from stimulus packages, which, you know, we could debate the last one is a necessity, but they push back on that. They push back on student loan forgiveness, which if you talk to anyone under the age of 30 right now and say, hey, can you buy a house with your student loans still hanging over your head? They're going to tell you no. No wonder our housing market is what it is right now. You know, you look at people and they also say, hey, my future doesn't look that bright with these other guys. I've heard plenty of people say, you know, hey, maybe the Democrat isn't my favorite candidate I could possibly have, but it's the person that most closely aligns with me. So I'll take it and at least get progress going a little bit to hopefully bring someone else in down the road. When you look at a lot of these Republican candidates, and John, you talked about it, you know, the Trump-endorsed candidates lost at a much higher frequency than not only expected, but historically speaking, this should have been, you know, the red wave, yada, yada. This should have been a huge victory for Republicans. It's a whimper in the House. Sure, you have a slight majority, but you don't have much. Gen Z pretty much said, hey, we're going to get you there, because that's really a popular vote is what the House comes down to. And let's look at his Senate races. He won J.D. Vance. Good for you. You sent the worst guy you could to the Senate, Donald Trump. Have fun listening to all the stories about Meemaw and how much he hates poor people. Good for you. You can tell I really hate J.D. Jerry, you want me to get some things off my chest? One thing months and months ago. I was at a leadership summit for the Democratic Party and listened to a whole day of panels and what have you. And eventually I got up to speak about the young Dems and fundraising. And my main joke, and I will say right now, I will put all the money in my pocket versus all the money that J.D. Vance withheld from people suffering from opioid addiction, that J.D. Vance will spend more time in Washington, D.C. than he will in Ohio. I will also challenge that J.D. Vance will spend 10 times more time outside of the state of Ohio in his 6-year term than he ever spends here. That's the guy that Ohio sent to the Senate. He doesn't care about us. He got the hell away from here the moment he could and just came back because his buddy gave him $15 million to go to the Senate. We could have had Tim. We could have had Tim Ryan, who actually gives a fuck. But we got J.D.
Well, they did film part of the J.D. Vance story in Ohio, and my father was an extra in that movie. So a vote for J.D. Vance was a vote for my father. So there's
that's a logic. The agenda for the Republicans, though, was the same agenda that they threw Truss out in England. That's what killed me. Yep. They had the same plans that Truss had, and she's out in, what, 6 weeks? Or did she even last that long? One of the shortest terms ever. Mm-hmm. And they're saying, what a horrible agenda. And that's the agenda that they were offering the American people.
And I'm hoping that's a sign of the times. I mean, it's kind of like my fiance and I talk a lot about, like, at some point, stupidity, like their stupidity has to catch up to them. At some point, there's a reason why things are dumb. And you know what I mean? It's because they don't work. And when you do them long enough at some point, and I think we're hopefully maybe finally starting to see the crack in that. The Republicans, I think, overplayed their hands with the abortion issue, you know, like you said, with the student loan. And so I really think that they think they have more of a mandate than they do. And I'm hoping that's kind of their downfall, is that they don't have the power that they think they do to do things.
Well, I think we're going to see a kind of a test of that theory, because with them controlling the House, they're going to be empowered to do some crazy shit for the next 2 years. But by not controlling the Senate, very little of it, certainly legislatively, literal legislation, is going to stick. It's just going to be like spaghetti thrown on the wall, you know, poop in the monkey house.
Don't you think and the so moderates are going to rein that in?
Yeah, though? The U.S. voter is going to see what is important to these people for the next 2 years.
Well, I think if I can jump in on that real quick, I think really what they're going to do is just bring up a bunch of just ridiculous investigations, dig into Hillary, mm-hmm. dig into Hunter, dig into all these. And I'm mm-hmm. hoping what happens is the American people watch this and compare and contrast it to the January 6th and the impeachment hearings and realize, okay, those were actual hearings. Those were actual people bringing forth evidence, bringing forth facts, bringing forth reliable witnesses that bring forth more evidence and facts. Instead of, I can't even imagine the actual kangaroo court that's going to be in the Congress over the next 2 years. And hopefully Americans wake up to that and go, oh, this is not what our politics should be.
As a former public school teacher, and don't talk about any of your literal students, but your impression, do you think the American population, based on your years as a teacher, is mentally equipped to do the thing that John just said?
I mean, they have the capacity, but they have not been educated in how our country really works, because they make our textbooks. Texas makes the textbooks mm-hmm. and they make them to be the most boring, dumb things you've ever read. And they do it on purpose. If you don't have a good teacher that can fill in the gaps and do things, then you're going to be completely lost, because they don't want any issues coming up in history class. They don't want anybody any feathers ruffled. If you look at an American history textbook, you're going to go, wow, that is not good. And that's just the way it is.
Yeah, I 100% agree, and I see the point you're making, but I also think there's a lot of people, I'm not expecting anybody who voted for J.D. Vance to watch this and go, oh, duh, but like, I think a lot of people who would have voted for, or maybe who did vote for Mike DeWine, but didn't vote for J.D. Vance, like my dad, for example, lives in Pennsylvania, he voted for Trump the first time, didn't vote for Trump the second time, at least that's the reading I got from him, and I think really the January 6th, you know, after Trump lost, I think that really woke him up to see, okay, this isn't the Republican Party I thought it was. I don't think he's ever going to vote for a Democrat again. But I think hopefully that will maybe ward him off the far right wing party.
Dan, here's another like a voter trend statistic question for you. And then, John, you get ready with one of your questions after this. So okay. Be ready, Freddie. I have read that young voters, the majority, maybe, I don't know an exact number, more than half the time, the first time they vote for the same party their parents vote for.
Mm.
Have you come across anything that would support or refute that?
I have not seen stats on that. However, in a past life, I was the election technology specialist for the Board of Elections here in Lake County. I checked a lot of people in to vote. I could tell right away because of how our system shows if it was their first time voting.
Mm-hmm.
There is some truth to that. I think, though, there is also a question of when they vote for the first time, right? If they're voting for the first time and they're still in the house, there's a chance that they're going to the polling location with their parent. There's a chance that they might not have researched the voters that much or the candidates that much, and they're kind of going off of what their parent had told them because that's, you know, a role model and trusted figure in people's lives. But if you see someone go to a college or school away, or, you know, move out for a job somewhere else in the country, they're likely to change their party affiliation because, hey, mom and dad aren't going to know if I vote for the Democrat. They're not going to know about it. It'll be fine. It's all private. There are certainly some trends on that. You can see in a lot of households, you know, party affiliation be, you know, the 54-year-old person, the 56-year-old person both be Republicans, and the, you know, 21-year-old, 22-year-old be a Democrat. That certainly happens at a very high frequency.
Well, you know, I have three adult kids and I encourage them to vote and vote however they want. And they don't have to discuss it with me at all. And I just have a very simple fiscal policy that if they don't vote Democrat, they can see how Republicans treat homeless people. So,
hey, Dan, I wanted to ask you this. It seems to me like the big scandal, the nuclear power plant scandal, they were unfazed by it. Like no one seemed to care about it at all. Is that what you see?
I don't want to divulge necessarily which campaign gave me this information just yet. I don't know if they shared it, but, you know, there were some campaigns that ran polling on House Bill 6, which is the, you know, bill I believe you're talking about, and as well as engaging and talking to voters. And what we found was people just don't understand. They don't get it. It's not something that phases them. Hey, $3 a month, I think in most cases, $3 to $4 or $5 a month in your energy bill. They don't see that for whatever reason. But I think the other part of it is, at least here up in Northeast Ohio, we have one of those plants. Just up the road from Jerry in Perry, Ohio, is one of those plants. And the message was, at least here, well, we don't want Perry to close. You know, what's the school going to do? The school gets a lot of money from that. The municipalities get a lot of money from that. There's a huge tax revenue from keeping Perry open. And that was the conversation. It was really another one of my things I want to talk about here is how we communicate a message needs to be in more detail. People didn't understand. Yeah, you know, yes, this kept Perry open. Perry could have stayed open without doing it this way. We didn't have to bail out a coal plant in Indiana. We also didn't have to bail this company out that spends, I think it's what, I'll be super conservative here and say it's $10 million on the naming rights of the Cleveland Browns Stadium. Like, it comes a time where you say, you know, if I'll pick a great local business in Painesville. If Joggins Hardware needed a bailout from the federal government and we found out that Joggins was buying ads on the side of Lake Tran buses, we would tell them, well, we'll give you some support here, but stop doing that. Just stop that expenditure there. We didn't see that. And we see with a lot of voters, the frustration is just not there yet. The understanding of these very complex pieces of legislation are not there yet. And I do want to go and say a lot of that is because how much stress and other things are going on in people's lives where they can't take the time to look into what legislation really means. You know, I've got friends working 60 hours a week and barely getting by. And I tried, you know, to coach them in voting and maybe I get them to vote, but really they're going off of my recommendations. They're not able to do the research themselves.
Well, I feel like buried in here or adjacent to what you're talking about, Dan. I mean, it's often said, like in pop culture or general culture, that Democrats are not good at messaging. Huh. But so that's a whole thing. But I also think that, just for example, legislatively, Trump passed a huge, we'll call it tax cut.
Sure.
Biden, with slim controls in the House and the Senate, has passed a number of bills. It's actually quite a long list if you look at it listed. Mm-hmm. Those bills that he passed, they're not things that can be explained in a slogan like tax cuts.
No.
And so, like you're just saying, like all the complexity in the power plant issue, all of the Dem bills have complexity, but it's legislation, it's complicated, it doesn't take effect right away. Whereas Trump and Republicans can go tax cuts, and then everyone goes, For those of you listening at home, I just nodded like a simple dog, by the way. So if you get the visual of how a simple dog nods, that's what I was doing.
Well, I think so. Two parts there. The first being communicating that message can't be done at a polling location on election day in right. a passing moment. It has to be a conversation. It has to be people mm-hmm. having tough conversations with the people in their lives and understanding going in, hey, they may tell you to fuck off. They may tell you that you're wrong, but you have to stay with it. I had a conversation with a friend of mine months ago where we talked about a mutual friend that we're both trying to just get through to him. Like, hey, man, you can do this. We know you're smart enough to understand this concept here. And this other friend was getting ready to give up. And I told him, we can't. You just got to keep trying. You got to keep trying to just come from a place of love and kindness and say, hey, let me just not sway you, just inform you. Here's what Biden has done to fix this issue. Here is what can be done to solve this. But to the other point, no, we don't have a great slogan like just tax cut, right? We can't mm-hmm. do that. But what we can't have are just the absolute worst slogans I've ever heard in my life. Because I will tell you, I never heard a Democrat yell defund the police at any point. But somehow that became a slogan.
It somehow stuck to the Democrats as a slogan. Yeah. Yay, though I've never heard a Democrat candidate for any significant office have it as a campaign slogan or platform.
I have seen candidates that do it. Normally they lose 80-20.
Okay.
primary, and they never see the light of day. Is really what becomes of them. Sorry, Jerry, but I forgot your other point that you had made, and it was very good. And I wanted to talk about it. I blame it in the lack of caffeine.
Hey, well, let's turn all the caffeine over to John.
There we go.
22 minutes ago, I told John to prepare his next question.
Well, I haven't had any caffeine, so I think the two I'm going to roll into one, because we talked about the Trump effect a little bit with, more establishment Republicans faring better than Trump Republicans. I want to turn that now to the 2024 election. And I think Trump got a very loud message that the party doesn't want him. But is that going to stop him? I think if Trump was the type of person who cared about the Republican Party and actually believed in the ideals that he was pretending to believe in, he would say, I'm not the candidate anymore. I don't even know if I'm the kingmaker anymore. And I think he would step aside and let Ron DeSantis kind of take the reins. I don't think he's going to, and it seems very clear already. But I'm just curious because I really think, and maybe Dan and Marv, you guys can tell me if I'm off base on this. I'm hoping what happens is Trump and DeSantis have to go out and fight a bitter, hard-fought primary. And a lot of people who would have voted for DeSantis had Trump just step back and say, Ron DeSantis is our guy, might now say, F DeSantis, listen to all these things. Because Ron DeSantis is going to go out and have to call Trump an extremist. And, you know, he's going to have to go out and run somewhat of a dirty campaign. And I think that's going to chase a lot of Republicans off who might have otherwise voted for DeSantis had he not had to do that. So I'm just kind of curious if you guys think that's true. If you think that's not going to happen, what are your thoughts on it?
Marv, you go first.
I think we'll get Dan second. When it's based on the fundraising that he does after he makes his announcement, if he gets a ton of money, he's in. He's staying in. And he will turn, like his niece is a some kind of psychologist. I don't know what kind, but she says that he will burn that party to the ground before he quits. And I believe it. He'll run independent if he has to.
R-I-N-O was trending on Twitter yesterday. So I just jumped on and said, Republican in name only. Trump's the biggest Republican in name only in the history of the Republican Party. Give me a break.
Very like.
Dan, what do you think about Trump's situation right now in 2024?
Like John said, we can assume tonight he's going to announce that he is running for president. I don't think DeSantis will try to paint him as an extremist. I think he'll paint him as a fraud. I think he will paint him as someone who, as we just found out today, is fundraising using Herschel Walker's name in Georgia. And I think it's 90 cents of every donation that goes through this link Trump has sent out to Republicans to support Herschel Walker. 90% of the money goes to Donald Trump. 10% goes to Herschel Walker. Much like Marv
but
said.
But I heard Trump say that he's paying for his campaign himself. Donating all his money to wounded veterans or something.
It's fascinating that $94 million of the, it's not donations, it's support, I guess. Is just sat there and did nothing while his Senate candidates all died. I think it is interesting if it is DeSantis and Trump. And I think they're both so prideful that neither would step out unless it was very obviously clear that they had lost. Because, you know, both of these guys are the type of people to really admit when they lose. But the guy that I will say, and I in my preparation, I looked at all these states and, you know, the massive wins whenever someone feels pessimistic about this election. There were big wins, but one in particular was a governor flip in Maryland. For the longest time, you talk to people, they didn't know that the state of Maryland had a Republican governor. They arguably had the best governor in the country in Larry Hogan. And I'll stand by that. Larry Hogan might be the third candidate in this three-way primary between DeSantis and Trump. He has the record that DeSantis wishes he had. He has the ability to say, I turned around a state that was run by a Democrat and run poorly. Maryland was not doing great before Larry Hogan comes in. It's now leaving. He's handing it off to Wes Moore, the Democrat, with a huge amount of respect between the two men. No, Larry Hogan doesn't agree with Wes Moore and everything, but they're working together in this transition. He's leading rather than dictating. I'd keep an eye out for Larry Hogan. I know there's the whole conversation Mike Pence might run. Good for him. He'll get 7% of the vote in most of the major states. Good.
Mike Pence couldn't run a vacuum cleaner. I remember in 08, or maybe 06, leading up into 08, 07, 08, that it was supposed to be Hillary versus Giuliani.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, that was pre-Trump, so everything has changed around the gravitational BS that is Trump. But it might be also like the whole landscape could be different a year from now.
There could easily be someone in the Senate or in the House of Representatives that has a phenomenal next 13 months and really makes a name for themselves. That's really where we're at. You got about 13 months.
Yeah, I mean, again, I agree that Trump's likely to run, but I was just whimsically thinking that, you know, if he was smart, even for his brand, that he's in a better position as being the kingmaker.
Yes.
He doesn't have to do that much work. People give him money for free, as you're saying with Herschel Walker.
Money anyway once, too.
And he doesn't have to do anything. I mean, it's actually a better gig. We're coming up to the top of the hour, and other shows and podcasts at the end of their shows have lightning rounds. I'm a science nerd. We have electron rounds because we go even faster than lightning. We're like electrons. So I want you to do is line up two or three things you really wanted to make sure got said, and we'll go around the panel and give everybody a chance for a quick answer.
One of the biggest things is maintaining the Senate for Democrats. I think that's going to have a big impact on the courts. What do you guys think going forward? How important is that to Democrats moving forward, is being able to put federal judges on benches?
Marv.
It's huge because right now we're seeing these Trump judges come up with ridiculous rulings against everything. And they're going to dominate the landscape with the rulings because there's going to be so far out of line with the rule of law that we're going to have to counteract it with just more judges that can overrule them.
Dan?
No, it's huge. And I'll go one step further there and say if there is a Supreme Court vacancy over the next 2 years, Joe Biden will get to make that appointment and the Democrats will get to affirm and get that person onto the bench. So that is huge as we lead up into the next election here, especially since if we remember correctly, back in 2016, the delay of a Supreme Court nomination for Merrick Garland became really dependent on Mitch McConnell as Senate Majority Leader. We will not ever have Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell again here in the United States. That is certainly a huge impact.
Well, you know, my one sentence history lesson for the kids at home is Newt Gingrich murdered Congress and Mitch McConnell's been fucking its corpse ever since.
Jesus fucking Christ.
Gross, but accurate.
And, you know, a friend of, a younger Jerry once went independent one year. I have to say that's when Al Gore lost. I've talked to independent voters that are just friends over the years. And one friend of mine once said, it doesn't matter who's on the Supreme Court. They'll never overturn Roe. And I think we've learned that we cannot trust those sorts of old fashioned wisdoms any longer. Who is on those Supreme Court matters, it turns out.
Yeah, they are not afraid to use their power.
No. John, next electron question.
I guess maybe, I don't know if you're familiar, I don't know how quickly we can wrap this up, but Merrill versus Milligan is like leading in with the courts as a big court decision that was brought to the courts in February and is going to be, got stayed till after the election. I don't know, Dan, are you familiar with this at all? Because I can go into it real quick. But basically what it is Alabama could have redistricted two districts to be majority or to be majority black districts, which according to 1964 Civil Rights Agreement bill, they have to do that if they're able to. But they ruled it into just one district. Three federal judges, two being Trump appointed ones, ruled that that was unconstitutional or most likely unconstitutional. The Supreme Court pushed it until after the election and they're going to rule on it. They heard arguments in October. They're going to rule on it in December. Can you tell me just how big this is? Just the fact that they didn't rule on it in the first place and what it would be if they overturned this decision by the lower courts?
So I have not read that. It is on my docket, but I have not read it in its entirety, so I don't want to give an opinion yet.
The court case is going to be huge. John and I were talking about it before we went on the air. But just to touch on the same theme, Ohio's having its own redistricting controversies. I remember 9 or 10 years ago, I'm old and feeble-minded now, John and Marv and Dan, so help me out. Didn't Ohio pass some rule that the next time there was going to be redistricting, they were going to make a panel of 3 Republicans, 3 Democrats, and a judge and do it in a bipartisan manner? Isn't that what was supposed to happen?
That sounds vaguely familiar.
And then nothing like that occurred in the past 2 years. So what the fuck is going on with Ohio redistricting?
Maureen O'Connor tried to enforce it, and they shut her down. They shut her down. She's never been I've never been a huge fan of her rulings or anything, but she tried to do the right thing for Ohio and they have the power and they're using it.
Well, my fear really is, when you look at authoritarian takeovers of countries, the thing they try to do is delegitimize the courts, you know, pack them with loyalists. And then once they have enough loyalists in, they just pass laws and then don't challenge them. You know, I think this is what we're kind of seeing. There was an issue on the most recent Ohio ballot that took bail reform kind of off the table, kind of took the courts out of that and made it all about legislation. So that really, to me, is what happens when authoritarians take over, is they render the courts useless.
Dan, what do you think about the redistricting foobar in Ohio right now?
Well, and it's not even just Ohio that does this, and I do want to play the middle as much as I can. We see this in all states. We saw it in Illinois that did the opposite of Ohio, right? Ohio kept proposing Republican heavy maps that were not proportional to the vote from the 2018 or 2020 elections. We saw the same in Illinois. We saw the same in New York. Frankly, these are processes that should be handled by people who don't have a stake in the game. This is why a lot of countries call in when they're writing constitution, when they're writing very important legal documents, when they're going through these important processes, to have a mediator, to have professionals come in to try to lead the way. And Ohio tried, right? I want to give them credit. Ohio had independent map makers come in. The Republicans threw those maps out really quickly. I looked at them. They seemed pretty good to me. They seemed to follow all the rules. I don't know what the difficulty was there in understanding, but we certainly need a better path forward on redistricting. Like you said, we passed a law to fix this thing, and somehow that's not doing enough. I don't know what's going to take.
But now they have 3 more Supreme Court judges, so it's not going to happen.
Hey, so Dan, on comedy podcasts, we always end by people plugging shit they have to plug.
Oh, God.
I think in the post-pandemic world we live in, me, John, and Marv have all started performing way less than we were a couple of years ago. John, you got any appearances you want to plug coming up?
Open mics I'll be at. So if you're in Cleveland and you find an open mic, I'm going to try to get to some. So if you want to see me tell really bad jokes, come to like Taco Tontos or LVT or something.
Hey, Mad Marv. What do you got? I know you started a new podcast. What's that about?
It's Unsuitable Language. It's John's podcast. We're going to get together and start. Our first one's going to be about the elections.
You're just warming up with us.
Yeah,
John ready. Wellington.
I got all the information from Dan and John and you now. I can use it.
Is that with John Wellington?
Yes, John Wellington. Yeah. Unsuitable Language. We're going to. I think we might be airing it Thursday, but I'm not positive. We have to do another meeting.
So everybody watch out for Marv and John's new podcast. Dan, you got anything you want to plug?
Yeah, I'll kind of loop back to something you talked about earlier in the show, housing insecurity, homelessness. Yes, you had that fun conversation with a gentleman at polling location. I want to plug real quick, Lake County's Extended Housing does a lot of great work connecting people with housing opportunities, a fresh start. Does not get talked about enough. Housing insecurity consumes mm-hmm. all factors of a person's life. If you don't have mm-hmm. a safe place to stay, it's hard to have a safe place to go to work. It's hard to be able to support yourself. So Lake County Extended Housing, definitely. And because it's this time of year, the Greater mm-hmm. Cleveland Food Bank, which supports Cuyahoga County, Lake County, Ashtabula, Geauga, all of Northeast Ohio. It supports not only the food bank properties, but also it helps support Meals on Wheels for people who are stuck in their house. Chances are you know someone who's needed those programs before. Help them as much as you can, especially now. $5, I think, goes and creates 25 meals. You do not have a better return for your donation. So Greater Cleveland Food Bank, please, please support. That's all I got. Thank you, Jerry.
Thank you. Absolutely. Thank you, gentlemen. I am trying to, my New Year's resolution for 2022 was to finish my satire book by the end of the year. So I got 6 weeks to go and I'm getting that book done. So that's my number one goal. So hopefully on January 1st, I'll have some kind of announcement. Other than that, the Comical Heathen coffee mugs and merch can be found at Jerry's Merch Shop on Etsy. And it just remains for me, your host, to thank my guest today. John, thanks for being my co-host.
No problem.
And Mar, thanks for being our special guest.
I had a blast.
And Dan, thanks for coming on and being the voice of reason and knowledge in our otherwise frivolous conversation.
I hope I didn't make an ass of myself.
Well, I was hoping you'd make a bigger ass of yourself. So you just hit the target just right.
Oh, then you know, you should give me a chance to talk about how Joe Biden should not run for president in 2024. That would have been great.
Oh, we'll save that for the next episode. Save that for the next episode. Thank you, everybody, for listening. You can email me at comicalheathen@gmail.com. Our theme music is my friend Mark Bell playing the organ, remixed by my other friend Jeff Gettert. And finally, it remains for me, your host, to say, it may be your dogma, but it's my karma. And I'm all about spreading the love. Thank you, everybody.